All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the table. It's been a great week. It's been a crazy week, but we are here. We're looking forward to having a great podcast today. But wherever you are, pull up a chair, so get a cup of coffee, some tea, pop open a tap, whatever you like to do, whatever you sit back and drink and sit back and relax. Hopefully we can provide some unbelievable insight for you and some questions that you can hopefully debate with friends and go about it. But thank you for joining us, taking the time on the Meeting of the Unknowing Minds. As always, my name is Matt Ashe, the head cross country associate head track and field coach at UAB. Your host. We've got an outstanding panel as always, a little smaller than normal. You know, the Ozarks, or who knows what, somebody got snatched up somewhere with everything going on. But we got an incredible panel and incredible guests. We're looking forward to getting through this. So first and foremost, let's start off with our panel as always. Up in Bloomington, Indiana, the multi-jumps extraordinaire, Mr. Mike Erb. Mike, great to have you here again.
Good to be here.
Man, we've got out in Nevada, he hasn't changed his chandeliers or the color of his house yet, Mr. Scott Williamson. How you doing, sir?
Doing well, doing well.
Love it. On time for once, didn't need to go to McDonald's or the beach or run around charging phones. Up for the director of cross and track at Monmouth University, Mr. Mike Nelson.
Hello.
There he is. He's there. He's dealing with people trying to do visits during COVID, which is not a smart idea right now. And then lastly, but not least, the man whose best friend is the Billiken, Mr. John Bell from St. Louis University. How are we doing, sir?
Doing well. Good to be here again.
Oh, man, it's great to have you guys here. And we have an incredible guest with us today. We'll be talking to him on a topic that is very, not controversial, but something that I think we all have a lot of genuine interest in, and we try and learn a lot of. But we have Mr. Blake Klotz. He is the Associate Director of Sports Performance here at UAB, deals with women's basketball, and he'll tell us more about what he does. But Blake, honestly, great to have you here.
Thank you so much for allowing a meathead onto a round table as decorated as this one is.
I don't know if we'd go decorated as this one. We just all try and keep our heads afloat, and we're going for it. But it's great to have you here. We're looking forward to getting into everything. But normally we do a week, you know, a week of track and field. I know there's some decent performances out there, some good performances. But due to some time constraints and things like that today, we're going to jump right into this. So, Blake, if you would, how does one become a strength and conditioning coach? How'd you get into this?
So, I think you really have a passion for lifting. I started volunteering at Murray State a long time ago, and I did it because there was a weight room at my dispense, and I was tired of paying fees to go work out. So selfishly, I thought, well, if I could become a strength coach, then I have a gym at my disposal at all times, and I don't have to pay for it. I actually get paid for it. Now I was wrong in getting paid, because we all know the finances in college athletics can be tricky at some sports, but that's how selfishly I got into it. And then, you know, I like to serve my athletes as best as my abilities. I think it gives me the constant need for growth, as far as, okay, everything is always different. Cross country is different than tennis. It's different than track and field. It's different than basketball. And you can really kind of hone in on specific sports. You know, and there's a lot of strength coaches out there that might not do that, and that's okay too. They have a generalistic kind of standpoint. But for me, it was, wow, this is kind of, it's like a puzzle. Putting pieces of a puzzle, I have to be always intrigued. I have to be kind of always type A, like most of us on here probably. And so I got to be intrigued by it. So that's what's stimulating me to stay in it.
What did you sit back and study? Like, so what route do you want to be in this? You're seeing yourself at an open gym lifting and stuff like that. So what route did you take? Did Murray State have a program that could help you with that? Did you jump on with one of the sports teams or the department?
So again, I probably don't have the same background as a lot of people. I have a wildlife biology degree from my undergrad. Wanted to work in a zoo, to be honest with you, and that shit didn't go very well. Excuse my language. So then again, okay, I fell in love with lifting, and I met the strength coach at Murray, and I just really fell in love with it. And he guided me to a path of being okay, you need to go get your master's in kinesiology. So to really answer that question, there are kinesiology programs, exercise physiology programs, exercise science, even PE degrees where you can get your certificate being a PE coach and still kind of be a strength coach at the same time. And there's all sorts of masters. They're everywhere now where it's up to like PhDs for biomechanics. You can have nutrition kind of backgrounds. You can have movement backgrounds. But I would say kinesiology, exercise phys is probably the main one that everybody kind of does. And most programs have it nowadays. Most schools have it.
So go ahead, Scott, you got something? Oh. No.
So what kind of athletic background did you have? Did you come into it? Were you a collegiate athlete yourself? Or, what was your background in sports coming up?
Right. So I played high school, baseball, basketball, football. You know, wasn't very good at any of them, but just really loved sports. Mm-hmm. And it's just the team aspect. I was actually kind of a really terrible team athlete. Every coach probably hated me, but I was willing to do some of the small things that they didn't. I digress. Anyways, yes, sports were big, but I didn't make it to college. Mm-hmm. I think making it to college gives you an aspect of strength and conditioning and all the other stuff that you can see experience-wise, like you're in it, you're doing this. So I think that will help too. But I didn't take the college route, but what I did when after I graduated, I went back to my high school and I helped coach the football program, which was basically a pencil pusher, but it really helped me kind of say, I want that team feeling again. I want that camaraderie between staff or coaches or teams. And so I've always had a desire to coach. I think when I was going to school, I really wanted to be a PE coach / baseball, football, or basketball coach. It didn't really matter. I was just going to do it. And so I just kind of ended up in the weight room. Mm-hmm.
You're dealing with basketball now, women's basketball.
Yep. And women's and men's tennis.
Men's and women's tennis. When you got to UAB, you got down here. What sports did you work with? Because you've been here for 6-7 years now. What sports did you deal with?
So I got here in fall of 11, actually, so almost 10.
Almost 10, my mistake. I apologize.
That's okay. I started as a GA in fall of 11, so I got my master's here at UAB in kinesiology. I've worked with football. I've worked with men's basketball in a different aspect. I've worked cross country, track and field. You know, I've worked with all sports, either directly or indirectly. I've had some favorite sports. I've had some sport because they like to train in the weight room. Your team was one that you always gave me insight and flexibility, and you know, always gave me the right to train your team, and I always appreciated that. And so, really, if the team respects the weight room, I really fall all into it. But yeah, every sport at UAB that we've had, I've had some aspects of helping or directly or indirectly.
So you've dealt with a lot of the sports. Simplest question. Your favorite one, of course, to deal with was women's cross country, women's basketball. This, you guys are out the door. I'm sorry. You know, you're probably number two, but you know, in all honesty though, what's the easiest sport? Cause you've had a bunch of different ones, which is great, but what's been the easiest to deal with? I mean, from any standpoint, from even from a periodization standpoint, or even just straight from a dealing with athlete standpoint.
Yeah. Football has its own complex. Mm-hmm. But I'll answer it by this.
Okay.
No sport is hard. It is getting the coaches to buy into who you are and what your philosophy is. And I don't really believe in a philosophy per se. I believe in a system, but it's really, can you take your system and adapt it to said sport? Whether it's football or whether it's cross country, whether it's tennis, whether it's women's basketball, they all want something different. And can you appease that coach with your system and not train them like football if they're not football? And that's hard to do because you see certain lifts that football is using.
Yep.
And as a coach, this is your job, and mm-hmm. rightfully so. Your job is to say, well, I don't know if we need that, you know? And so then it's my job to say, okay, here, coach, here's all my validation. Here's why we're doing what we do. What can we do better? What can we do worse? Or what can we take out that we're doing things worse? So as far as what sport do I like the most, I don't know that I can really answer that. Softball was really fun. I'm not going to lie. Softball teams really get after it because you don't have to worry about fitness. You don't have to worry about, besides the coach running them for no reason, but you don't have to worry about a whole lot of lower body overuse stuff. You just got to focus on the upper body. So that was kind of fun. But I'll say this, the 2 years I had track, and this isn't, you know, anything with you because we have our relationship and I really enjoyed our girls.
Yeah,
but track and field, you know, the track and field program in itself, cross country all the way down to whatever, multis, is a fun team to train if you have the resources. And what I mean by resources is I did the whole team myself.
Yep.
And it can get a little daunting because there are so many people on a team. I can only imagine if it's a men's and women's team, you have more numbers than the football program in some schools. And so it's really fun though, because you don't do any of the speed work. You don't do any of the jumping. You don't do any of the fitness. You really are just a strength coach and you can really program based off of where we're at. Periodization, if you want to use periodization, if it's a, you know, hey, we're tapering here, we're tapering there. And we understand lingo, track and field coaches and strength coaches. They understand the same lingo because they're doing the same thing out on the track or on the pit or in the vaults or whatever. So that was a fun sport too. I go back and look at, you know, my cards from track and field and I'm like, man, this is fun. Now the throwers are real fun. I am not even gonna lie because they can really like get, they'll boost your ego a little bit as a strength coach.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it.
I'm trying to think of the best way to ask this question. So I guess from my outside looking into strength conditioning coaches, I've kind of watched your role with team sports particularly maybe evolve, you know, over the years. Whereas I look at, and I'm kind of, obviously I'm biased. We coach track and field. And I feel like we are similar to strength coaches in that at the end of the day, we're concerned with fundamental human movement, right? And speed, power. It's, I think our philosophies are going to be a lot the same in that, you know, and I hesitate to say we have a little better understanding of some of the biomechanics and physiology than maybe a team sport does. And what I've seen, I watch some of these, the relationship with the strength coach in a team sport atmosphere and what they're all responsible for, to me, looks very different than what they're, like you kind of hit the nail on the head saying, all you had to worry about was lifting, right? You weren't doing the sprints. So is that something that's been the same since you've been in it? Or do you see, I watch these strength and conditioning coaches become much more involved with the team sports. And I've watched team sport coaches get away from understanding the fundamentals of sprinting and jumping and throwing, you know what I mean? And those sort of things where that, so have you seen that change or has that been a challenge at all?
Yeah, I think as a young strength coach, and I'm still young and I still want to learn. I think the younger you are, the more you think you have to do. Right. I think the word have to is the right word. The older you get, the more you lean on coaches that want to lean on you. So like with track and field, right? I'm not going to come up to you and say, hey coach, you know, girl's not jumping very well off of her right leg, because you can see that. I think as far as football, let's take football, because I think that's the sport, and basketball is that, yeah, or you're seeing that strength coaches and baseball, strength coaches are part of the team. Mm-hmm. The coach hires that person. And it's probably happening in a lot of track and field programs in the Power Five, but you're starting to see that the coaches really trust the strength coaches because they have to be certified. They have to do this. I'm not saying it's right, wrong, or indifferent. I'm just saying that the trust is there. There's also that aspect of I hired him, right? I hired this person to do my job. And those situations can get a little tricky too, because you do what the coach tells you to do. So you either have freedom or you don't have freedom. Now, I'm very fortunate with my coach that I have a lot of freedom, and he tells me, you know, I don't care how you do it, just get it done. Mm-hmm. And that's really fun. And that's what Matt and I kind of had too when, mm-hmm, when I was a part of a department and not a part of a staff. So let's use Matt as an example too. I'm not going to tell him, hey, you need to do X amount of miles per week to get a girl's in shape. because that's not my field. Yep. That's not my field. My field isn't necessarily cross country. Now, do I have strength and conditioning to my name? Absolutely. But this sport doesn't need me to condition them. And I think that's what every strength coach has to sit back and look at and say, okay, they really didn't come here to be a strength or to be a weightlifting athlete, right? I didn't go out there and recruit them and say, come to UAB and be a part of our weightlifting team. Mm-hmm. No, they're here because Matt said, hey, come be a part of our cross country program. And by the way, here's Blake. He's going to be your strength coach. And so twofold, mm-hmm. I hope I'm answering your question, Coach.
Oh, yeah.
If you're part of the staff and you're brought in as this strength coach and all these other factors, there's trust, there's hired, and typically those coaches are going to trust you to do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. There's going to be some parameters. But if you're a part of the department and you're assigned a strength coach, that's where it's different. Mm-hmm. And as a strength coach, what you have to do is take your ego and put it at your desk and say, okay, these cross country girls, they're not here to be weightlifters. They're here to be cross country girls. And so it's hard. It's a hard line to follow.
Yeah. No, I find that's absolutely true. And I mean, I'm fortunate. Will Ali he actually does track and then baseball as well. And we've got a great relationship. I mean, he was kind of assigned but we've been able to, we share a common language so that helps a lot. Yep. You know, we're both coming at it from a very, like I said, fundamental physiological and biomechanical viewpoint. And he's got strengths that I don't, and I have strengths that he doesn't have. And we're able to make that work. But yeah, that trust mm-hmm. part, and not just with the coaches, but with the athletes too, right? Like,
right.
You know, if you're a trusted strength coach for those athletes, they're looking at you the same as they're looking at me. And that's great. You know what I mean? Like, I want them to be able to go in there and know that, hey, this guy's going to do exactly what I need. And that we're both on the same page, you know what I mean, myself and him. So,
yeah. And I'll even put it one back on you guys, because you're all track and field guys. Every Power 5 throwing coach, do you think they trust the strength coach? Because everyone I've talked to, they're the strength coach.
I was going to say, ours absolutely doesn't trust anybody but himself to do anything in the world. So.
Exactly. And that's okay. But, like, yeah. There's that, like, and I actually really, I met a couple of them working with track and field here. Because the indoor nationals are sometimes in Birmingham, and so they would train in our facility. And they know what they're talking about, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it's like, well, why do you need this specialist thrower strength coach when you have a thrower's coach that talks the same language?
That's right? A good question. Why do you?
Well, and I'm not trying to get every strength coach fired out there.
I was going to say, it's good. That's a controversial question, right? Yeah.
It is, but go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it comes down to coaches recruiting, coaches doing this, coaches, I mean, you guys have a lot on your table, right? But at the same time, like, strength coaches cannot, and I repeat, cannot think that they are the end of the puzzle. Young strength coaches, and I'll put myself in this really hard because this is what I thought when I was young. And I think it goes to, like, almost every young coach, but I'll put myself in a strength coach. We think we're the end all be all. You have to go through us. You have to do this. You have to do that. And as my experiences started going, like, you know, there was a softball coach here a long time ago. She had great knowledge of strength and conditioning. She wanted to be a strength coach, but she chose being a softball coach instead. Now, I'm not an advocate of coaches being their own strength coach when they don't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And I do think that they need to have certifications in that realm if that's what they want to do at the Power 5 level and even at our level. Do we really need coaches being their own strength coach? Maybe not. I'm going to say no because it helps secure my position, but that's selfish too. But at the same time, we can coexist. I think, you know, at UAB, we didn't have a throwers coach. And so, well, let me rephrase that. Our jumpers coach is our throwers coach. And so she was like, look, Blake, you know, I got a lot on my table. I need you to just take it and run with it. And that's the way we had it. So I had throwers, I had jumpers, I had sprinters, and then I had cross country, and I even had multis. And she had the multis as well. And so I think it's just where you're at.
Sure.
I think you kind of hit a interesting point there. It's like, you know, you're definitely not the whole puzzle. There's so many different pieces. And, you know, I would say, you know, for different sports, you are a bigger piece of the puzzle than others. You know, for track and field, you know, it's, you know, we do so much, you know, sprinting, jumping, throwing, et cetera, that the weightlifting is, you know, it's important, but it's a smaller piece of the puzzle versus, you know, some of these other sports where it's like, that's maybe the main component of, you know, their fitness levels and conditioning.
Right. So, and I think a lot of strength coaches, if they listen to this, they're going to be like, man, he's really throwing us under the bus. And I'm not. What I'm saying is we are very important, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But we're important as a supplemental piece to the pie. And Matt and I talked about this all the time. There's a piece of the pie that an athlete goes through, right? There's stress, there's school, there's cross country, there's lifting, there's education. There's all these things in this piece of pie. Well, I only have this much. And it's not very much. That adds up. But I need to make sure it is a supplemental part of their training. It is not their whole part of training for cross country. Even basketball, like, did they come here to be weightlifters? No. If they're good weightlifters and terrible basketball coaches or basketball players, we're getting fired in 3 years. We don't need that. And so that's my approach. Now, can I do things to make them better movers? 100%. Can I do things to make, hopefully, lessen injury, reduce some injury possibilities? Yes, I think I can. But I'm not going to make them better basketball players. I'm not going to make them better throwers. I'm not going to make them technique-wise better throwers. I'm not going to make them, you know, more fit because we did a split squat versus a back squat. So I think that's what strength coaches really have to figure out is what can I help with? Because we can hurt with a lot. That was another point that Matt and I always made is I could really mess up a cross-country player. Like, within 2 days, I can have them out for the season. And I think strength coaches need to understand that. Like, you're not here to make people weightlifters for the long haul. You're here to supplement their training to make sure that they can play what they came to play.
Well, it seems, you know, over – you know, last several years, you know, the strength and conditioning profession has really kind of grown, like, in their level, I don't know how to say this, like in their level of importance within a department. And so much of that is, you know, they're now seen as the group that kind of is the injury preventers. What's kind of, you know, your take on kind of the, you know, evolution of kind of the strength and conditioning, like over maybe like last 10 years, as you've kind of seen them kind of, you know, move into their current role?
So if you look at strength and conditioning, you have to know the lineage and how it was developed. It was developed because football wanted strength coaches back in the day. And that's just reality. Football in the 80s started hiring coaches to be the weight coaches, right? And then all of a sudden the weight coaches became the conditioning coaches. And then all of a sudden it was speed and it was power and it was this and it was that. And for about 10 years, that's all strength coaches knew was they have to lift heavy. They have to sprint fast. They have to produce power. And then they tried to take that. And as strength conditioning evolved, other sports said, hey, well, we want this too. Well, you can't take a football approach, and I'm not trying to dog on football because I think football is fun to train, but you can't take a football approach to any other sport. You just can't. It's too physically demanding. They have to put on size. They have to do other things that other sports can't do or shouldn't do, to be honest with you. I don't need to take my 5'5 guard and put 10 pounds on her. I don't know if she can handle that. I don't know that. So what do I need to do? I think as strength and conditioning evolved was coaches got more educated. And I mean coaches and strength coaches. Education became a real thing. And now you're starting to see these biomechanic people, these movement people that their jobs are to just designate to movement. Or you see these exercise scientists where their jobs are to monitor player loads. And so we've got two ends of the spectrum. We've got the old school approach and we've got the new school approach. And then you got the middle, right? And what I hope is I fall in the middle. I learn from what they did. I learn from what they're doing. And you take it and you put it, you put your system in place to said sport. And I think a lot of it is just education. A lot of it also is, to be real with you, a lot of these strength coaches are starting to get paid a lot of money to do these injury prevention. And I really don't like the word injury prevention because then it makes us act like we're playing with things that we really can't adjust. Sport is random. Sport is chaotic. We can't prevent anything, and neither can you guys. There's no reason why anybody should say that. I think we can get them stronger to help reduce things. But like athlete, I'm not going to say who it is, but like, let's say you have an athlete walking down the road texting and they freaking hit their head up against a freaking road sign and gets a concussion. What do you want me to do about that? And you're going to say the same thing. Like, what do I do about that? You put them on a course and it's muddy and she just loses traction. She has brand new shoes. Nothing's wrong. She just loses traction and she rolls her ankle. There's not much you can do about those types of things. Now you hope that they're strong enough to where they can recover a little bit faster. But I think injury reduction can happen and it's just about education. Educating your athletes too.
How big of a push has there been like in the last, 4 to 5 years to kind of, cause I know the certification like is in there, obviously there's different ones out there that's kind of, becoming, I don't know, maybe it was more important. I just didn't know about it, but it seems like it's becoming a little bit more pushed now. And kind of how has that kind of grown, the profession? Cause like I said, it looks like a lot of administrators, they want to put, I don't want to say responsibility, liability on strength coaches versus, other departments.
Yeah. So there's the NCAA a couple of years ago, I don't remember when, put a rule stating that if you want to be a strength coach, that you need to be certified by an accredited source. So in NCAA, there's a lot of gray areas, right? And so there's a bunch of certifications. The two that I don't know if they're the best, but the two that most strength coaches have are the NSCAs and the CSCCAs. So they're both kind of fitness-oriented, strength conditioning background. They're both accredited. And both of them have yearly summits or conferences, as you will. And, at these conferences, there's a lot of things that are talked about. There's football segments, basketball segments, how to reduce injuries here, how to player monitor here, nutrition, this, that, and the other. And I think those are really evolving. And what as a field what we are doing as strength coaches is we're saying, hey, administration, come to these conferences and see what we're learning. See what we're doing to add value to us. And I think that's why you see, and this is my opinion, you see strength and conditioning careers kind of going past sports medicine careers as far as that, right? They're the more medical side. We're the more, okay, let's be proactive side. Now, you can't have one without the other, in my opinion. You really need sports medicine. They are a pivotal group of people that you need. But we have decided, and what we've noticed is if we promote to our administration on what we're doing, they'll see the value and adds more value to the profession in whole. Now, not every school sees it that way. A lot of us see us still as meatheads, and that's frustrating to me too, because even though I introduce myself as like a educated background, but I love weightlifting, and what strength coaches have to do is get out of the persona. Now, I'm very energetic. I love yelling. I love screaming, not at people because they're in trouble, but I just love creating positivity. And what you see is a lot of strength coaches that do that. That's what they want to do. They want to create positivity, and they get this kind of tagged as, well, they're just yellers and screamers. That has kind of dwindled our profession as well. And so we've got to figure out how do we be okay with guys yelling and screaming, but yet educating ourselves to a standard, not just because we want to know, hey, it's not just about basketball anymore. It's about, okay, how do we load our athletes? How do we get the best without taking too much? So.
Okay. So you hit a really interesting point, and I'm really glad you said it. I saw Matt was kind of nodding there. So a question for everybody, but you for just a second, and I want to come back, right?
Yeah.
Because we have a national convention as well, right? So for the rest of the track coaches here, how many have either A, had an administrator attend that, you know, the convention, or B, who's even ever asked? Has anybody done that or seen that? And
I suggested it.
Yeah, right. Okay.
I suggested it once, but Nothing's ever come of it.
Because if I would take one thing away from what you said so far, one of my bigger questions is, like, I've watched strength and conditioning's role become far more valuable. I've been doing this 20 years, right? So I look at this from the beginning, and now you guys, to your credit, have have obviously increased in value monetarily. There's still, I think, a barrier to entry that we need to figure out, and that's true of all of our sports, but you've figured that out. And you've also, if we've talked about this on here before, I brought it up anyway, if you look at the way the rules are set up for the NCAA, the strength and conditioning coaches have more access to these athletes for more parts of the year than the sport coaches do. And whether that's right or wrong is irrelevant. The fact of the matter is you guys have done that, right? So my question was, and you kind of answered it just now, was how does that happen, right? Because what I know is through the summertime, I'm not allowed to barely look at my kids, right?
Yeah.
And they could be in that weight room damn near every day if they choose to, you know, and have and be coached to be taken care of and everything else. But somehow we become these people as sport coaches that are only there to unfairly or unjustly make them do work that they don't want to do. But man, strength coaches are like, hey, you do whatever you want, right? Because you've got certifications, perhaps because your administrators have been to these things, go, wow, these guys are really educated. They're really learning. They're really moving their profession forward. And if anything from this, I would take that away is, man, that would make, maybe that's something that we all need to do. In order to move ourselves forward as well, and not to take anything away from strength conditioning coaches. But, you know, I just see your roles becoming more and more important or more valued. And I wonder where that comes from. And that's probably where a lot of that does come from.
Well, to address the first part of that was, I've never even considered bringing in an administrator.
Yeah, me either. Yeah.
You know, I know that, I don't know, obviously now with, you know, if we have a convention or, you know, budget costs, you know, would an administrator, you know, be willing or able to come? But something that we definitely should be considering because, you know, like he said, you know, their sport is definitely growing. And, you know, I mean, you're kind of comparing yourself a little bit to athletic trainers and stuff, but it's like, you know, there's some coaches out there that are getting close to $1 million as a strength and conditioning coach. I don't know if there's any athletic trainers that's quite getting there, you know, so there's definitely been a lot of value that's been added to that profession.
Certainly no track coaches getting there. You know what
no,
I mean?
No. You also was mentioned, the hype guy. How much do you think that really hurts the profession?
I actually love it, to be honest with you. Now, I'll say there's naysayers. My really good friend is the head strength coach for Oregon football, Aaron Feld. He's the mustache guy. He was at Georgia for a little bit. And he gets a lot of bad rep because he is so eccentric and he is so in your face and he is so positive. Like the guy would, for me, he would make phone calls for me for no reason. Just, hey Blake, hey, blah blah school is going to call you, be ready. So he's a good person first. But does it hurt the profession? I can't say yes because I am also a rah-rah guy, but I'm not going to be a rah-rah guy the same way as, let's just use football as an example, right?
Yep.
To track and field sprinters. they're gonna look at me and be like, Blake, get that stuff out of here. Like, I don't need that. It's an individual sport. It's not, but it really is. And so I think as a strength coach, you got to realize who you're talking to. Now, there's a really good group of guys and girls out there, strength, females and males, strength conditioning coaches that are not rah-rah, that are really, really good at this craft. And I could probably spit off about 50 of them. They're just not rah-rah people, and that's okay. I think it depends on what your coach likes. And also what you got to think about too is how do I make myself more marketable, right? So we've talked about the people that make a lot of money. There are a bunch of us that don't make, and I'm not talking about my salary, I'm okay, but like there are a bunch of us that don't make the top of the tier. And coach, from you said something about how entry-level positions don't pay anything in every collegiate mm-hmm. sport, and that's the issue. But so, well, if I know the same as this guy right here, but I come off as a little bit more energetic, I'm probably going to get the job. Mm-hmm. And that's just the reality of it. And I'm not saying it's right, wrong, or different. That's how I'm choosing to be positive. Like I'm not going to come to the weight room and be Eeyore. Like I just don't, like if I'm Eeyore, then the girls and the guys are going to be like, well, this guy sucks. So I'm going to go ahead and tell my coach I don't really like him. And then 2 or 3 years down the road, he's going to get fired. So if you're all hype, maybe there's some concerns there, but I think you got to be flexible. I think in our profession, and even I would say in coaching professions, like if you guys are just sitting around Eeyore in it, like your team's not probably going to like you either. Again, there's some context in there, but like, it's just, to me, it's more fun. It's more fun. It's more fun to be a hype guy. I love it. I want my athletes to love the weight room. I hated the weight room when I was in school. I absolutely hated it. But I had a coach that knew what to say right times. And it affected me in a good way. Now, again, athletes are athletes, and I've read several books about personalities and conscious coaching and all this other stuff, but you're not going to get every athlete that way. And there's been some coaches, like one of my softball coaches were like, I don't need that. Okay, I got you. And that's fine. Like, again, as a strength coach, your coach says they don't want it, then you just don't give it to them. That's what he says. So
tagging along that a little bit, you kind of mentioned there at the end, the sport coach, they don't want something, et cetera. What is probably, in your opinion, some of the major frustrations you have working with, the sport coaches?
This is going to get real interesting real fast. <It's dangerous. laughs> Okay. You're basically like, hey, let's be transparent here. Let's tell everybody why we hate you guys and why we hate you.
It's a great question. Yeah, because I'm sure we've all had those knockdown, heated like conversations where it's like, why are we doing this or why are you doing that? And I mean, it's right.
And it probably stemmed from you, a girl or a guy, whoever it is, coming to you and be like, I'm hurting, like something's not right. And then it happened in the weight room, and you know what? That's a valid response, mm-hmm. right? So I think let's go to your question. What really, really frustrates me is when a coach comes in here and says, all I want you to do is circuits, or all I want you to do is this, like total 100% dictation of what they are doing in the weight room. Okay. I've had that once and it's frustrating. It's really frustrating because you give them facts, you give them this, like the same coach said that softball players should be running miles weekly for fitness. Whoa. And I'll be real with you even more. The miles were starting to add up to like a cross country program. Now, not to the top of your top elite people, but like your subpar people where their mileage are, that's what we're talking about. So you're looking at me like, man, that's kind of quite a bit. Yeah. So how do I get that coach to buy into what I'm doing? And I think the buy-in or the trust is the real issue. Do they trust you? And so as a strength coach, if you're not getting your coaches to trust you, shame on you. That's your fault. That's not their fault. You are probably assigned. I'm going to go ahead and speak for this panel. They are assigned to you without you even probably having any say in it. Right? Shame on the strength coach for not getting trust. I think that's where the number one underlying statement is that if you can't trust me at Monmouth, then it doesn't matter. And if I didn't do anything to allow you to trust me, then shame on me. Now, with that coach, I was trying to give her education. I was trying to navigate through salty situations, and it just never really worked out. Well, guess who was on the chopping block? Not her, me. So as a strength coach, I now have to say, okay, what now? I really wasn't on the chopping block, but I would have lost that sport, right? And if I lose so many of them assigned to them, they're going to look at me and say, well, why do we need you? Rightfully so. So I had to continue to work hard to get that trust, but make sure that my other teams really liked what I was doing. And so to really answer that question, I think it's the strength coach has to build that trust. I think if I was a head coach talking to the strength coach, I would want to know their system. What are you doing to my athletes? Matt and I had this conversation early when he first got here, and he had some ground rules. And I didn't look at him and say, I'm sure after the meeting, I'm going to be transparent. I'm going to be like, oh, come on. But to me, and this is me, those are the fun things. Okay. I'm going to throw something random out there. I don't know if this is actually what me and Matt talked about, but maybe he said no back squatting. Mm-hmm. Okay. Like if he said no back squatting as a strength coach, if you're listening to this podcast and you're like, man, that's stupid. Why is that stupid? Maybe his experience with back squat personally or any other athlete is very, very negative. And as a strength coach, you're telling me you only live by one strength protocol for lower body push. Like you need to be equipped to say, okay, if you don't want to back squat, what about this? Okay. If you don't want to back squat, then what about this? Like if you're so closed-minded and what I call married to exercises, then maybe you don't need to be a strength coach, just being real with you. But that's where the true conversation between me and Matt started taking place was, okay, Matt, I hear you. We were big on single leg strength. So Matt, I think that single leg strength will transfer to cross country. Here's how I'm going to do that. And here's our parameters and here's our guidelines. And that's how we set it up. And that's what we did. And we evolved. And there were some things that we took some bumps on the road. And there were some things that I had to back off. And there were some things that he did. Like there was one time, he might not remember this, but there was one time he came into my office and he sat down. He's like, hey, you have a minute? I said, yeah, sure. He's got my marker. I have a big whiteboard kind of like this. And he started writing down his full off-season mileage. And I was like, oh, he's going down a deep rabbit hole. And he did it. And he did it not to prove to anything, but to ask me, what do you think? What do you think about this? And I was nervous as all get out. But we had built that trust to where I was like, well, Matt, what do you think about? That makes sense. But what do you think about this? Right. And so this goes back to a couple questions ago. Well, why are strength coaches becoming more important to team coaches? Because if you just ask us, we've learned just like you guys, we've learned biomechanics. Not all. And I'm going to tell you this. Not all strength coaches are created equal. Just like not all track coaches, not just like all basketball coaches. There are some flaws that I have that make me worse. And I can say that with full confidence. But we've built the trust enough to say, hey, Matt, have you thought about doing sprints? I think it was hill sprints on your short days. You know, Blake, I really did think about that. Or I don't remember what it was. Hey, did you think about moving your long day to this day to provide more recovery for this day? You know what, Blake, that's really smart. Or no, Blake, that didn't work with our 20 hours. So the trust has to be there, whether you're assigned or whether you're hired. And if you can't trust the strength coach, I think that's fair too. Like if you got a guy or a girl that is just, no, I'm going to do what I want. No, I'm going to do what I want. No, I want to do what I want. There's no give there. And if I was you, I'd be saying, I need a new person. Like, this is my team. Like I get fired if this team doesn't perform at a high level. When I was assigned, I didn't get fired if Matt didn't perform at a high level. He got fired, not me. And so now it's a little bit different. Now I work with women's basketball and I'm part of their staff. So it's a little bit more, we talk more now because it's just the way it is. But if you don't have a strength coach that's willing to hear you and willing to make some adjustments, but in the flip side, if you're not listening to your strength coach, if they're making good quality sound judgments, then what are you both doing? Right?
You know, I think you hit the nail right on the head there, because, you know, so much of what we do in the weight room is determined by what we did that day out on the track or in the field. You know, so if we're not, you know, constantly communicating, you know, at least, you know, I try to go into the weight room while they're lifting and say, well, this is, you know, especially if something, you know, it was a bad day out there and things aren't looking good. And it's like, hey, you may want to back off today or something. But it's like, you know, I've always been a big proponent on, you know, what we do on the track or in the field needs to match up to what we're doing, you know, in the weight room as well. So, you know, having that level of trust and, you know, communication, which I think is huge, because, you know, like I mentioned earlier, it's kind of like, you know, the programs, you know, what I write for their program needs to match up to what, you know, the strength and conditioning coach is writing as well. So.
Yeah. And I think, so I'm going to say this is full transparency too. And this might get some head turns, but let's talk cross country again, right? Track and field has a big enough following to where strength coaches will like, all right, let's work with track and field. Let's talk cross country. How many strength coaches out there are like chomping at the bits to work with cross country? And I'm not saying it's fair. This is not a fair thing. I'm just being real with you. Mm-hmm. Right? So 100%, as, 100%. Right? So mm-hmm. What do you do to promote your program to the strength coach? And I'll use tennis now too. Let's throw tennis in the mix. I got a tennis program that literally works out one day a week. Literally works out one day a week. And it's optional. Mm-hmm. How much buy-in am I going to have as a strength coach to a tennis program that puts no effort for strength and conditioning? And I could use golf. I could use baseball. I could use softball. It doesn't matter what sport it is. How much priority, quote unquote, are you putting into the strength program? Now, And again, this is because Matt and I work together. But I made sure we met Matt and the other two coaches at least once a week.
Yes.
That's something that I wanted to do, mm-hmm. right? Now, Matt came into the workout every day. That's just who Matt is. He's very type A. That's what he wanted to do. He wanted to see it. And I never told him he couldn't do that because A, it's his program. But if you throw in and say, hey, you know, we're only going to go 2 days a week, that's fine. But look, during these 2 days, I think it's important that they do this. My tennis program, one of them, he's like, hey, we're only going to go 2 days. But what he told me after that was, but it's those 2 days are very important to me. All right, Chief, like, let's do this. You know, I'm going to make sure I write the best program for you at the same time. And so, again, that's not what people want to hear. That's the reality of the situation is some of these programs go under notice or don't care or whatever it is. But if you put importance into the weight room and you have this trust, I think you'll see it flourish a little bit more with, and even if it's resource or not, like if you have one strength coach compared to 17 strength coaches, there's some of that too. You can't really, that's not something you can control, but you know, if you have ample amount of resources, and you know, at UAB, we're good. We're not the best. You know, we only had 3 strength coaches when I was working on that, but we did the best we could. You know, if we had 5, then cross country might have their own strength coach. Who knows? But that's just not where we're at. So I don't know if that answers your question a lot, but just me being transparent.
No, that was, I mean, as Blake, you've mentioned back and forth, and we've gone through it on some of the stuff. I actually do remember the day that I came in and just started writing on the whiteboard. I think we were in there for about 4 hours straight, and we went through every little nook and cranny of what can we do, and here's what I'm doing. Okay, you understand your lingo. I understand my lingo. You know, why do we stand each other's lingo? So we could actually accomplish something and get it done. And I enjoy it. I always love walking through the weight room to make it see it, because I'm much more of a visual. You can tell me this is a suitcase, but I got six people that are telling me this is the same exact movement with six different names. Or this is a back squat. Okay, well, how do you do the back squat? And one of the things I always had the issue with was it wasn't the back squat itself. It was just a matter of there's a lot of kids coming from high school, and it doesn't matter if you're a multi-athlete or a thrower or a jumper, wherever you were, that don't know how to squat correctly. And you're going to tell a kid who's, you know, 5'3", 110 pounds that we need to go squatting. They've never done one in their life. And so that's where, I think, if I'm not mistaken, that's where you and I came up with. Well, it was your idea. So my apologies there. You came up with, let's all go with single leg. And it made the world a difference with that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then when I did started, I would throw, and now, again, I'm a strength coach. So I have a lot of flaws. But I remember one day, I told Matt, I said, hey, look, some of these girls are getting pretty strong single leg and they want to go to a bilateral squat. And so I have a proper progression that I choose to do. And I remember Matt coming in, and he wasn't super excited about it, but he saw that the quality of movement was there. And he goes, I don't know if I like it yet, Blake, but, and I remember that day, he was like, I don't know yet. I don't know yet. Let me think about it. And that's okay. And I think at the end of the day, if you value your, and this is going to come as much as possible, if you value the relationship with the coach that you have, then I think you can work well together. You're not always going to see eye to eye, and you shouldn't. There's going to be sometimes as a head coach or a position coach or whatever, you're going to have the final say, and I have to be okay with it. I might not like it, but I have to be okay with it. And at the same time, I might tell you something you might not want to hear, but it actually makes sense. If it doesn't make sense, then you tell that guy to go F off. But if it makes sense, then maybe listen to it. Maybe listen to it. Hey, you know what? Like, there. I remember again, Matt, I was like, hey, Matt, I think we need to start. I know it's a type one sport, but I think we need to start developing some type two muscles. And I think I can do it with low level plyometrics. Well, what did he say? Well, I'm worried about stress fractures. Well, rightfully so. It's a sport that unfortunately has some predominantly stress fracture problems. Well, we started doing it, and we didn't see any negative side. I don't know that we saw any positive side either, but we didn't see any negative side. So we kept going with it, you know, and it's just it's as less amount of trial by error as possible, but lots of talking.
You know, and this goes out to the track coaches here. How often, and for you as well, how often do you meet with, you know, the strength coach or the sport coach and kind of go over what they're actually doing in the weight room?
I go in the weight room. I'd say I'm at 90%+ of the actual sessions, right? And I mean, I have a little more background. When I was at Illinois, I actually did all of our strength conditioning and strength work. And in that way, I had to learn a lot and went through a lot of the things that a lot of strength coaches do. Not to say that I understand things better or at the level that they do, but so we probably formally meet every couple of weeks, but I mean, we talk every day, you know, so he understands. I can't remember who mentioned it, you know, well, I think it was you, Scott, you know, it has to go hand in hand with what we're doing on the track, and our coach understands that. So we have those types of conversations. He knows the type of, you know, energy systems, for example, we're working with on a particular day. And our athletes trust him to that level too, so they can communicate things. If they had a day that wasn't, you know what I mean, practice wise or something wasn't feeling good, they do a good job of that too. But we meet on the regular. We meet almost every day in some capacity.
As Blake said, I go in there on a daily basis, or at least I come in on the second half just to make sure and watch and talk and give an update of what the workout was in the morning, or if I see something in general from my workout in the morning, because we're at 6 a.m. right away. And with Blake, or excuse me, with Jared working with us now at 9 a.m., you know, I'm the first person, we're the first two people these kids disease. So we have to, I communicate right away with them if something goes wrong, if something's stressed, if somebody's overworked, whatever the case might be, we have to do that kind of stuff.
I guess maybe a little bit of that is like, how involved are you guys like in like writing, not so much writing the workouts, but like, and I know Herb kind of mentioned, you know, these are the energy systems, or, you know, letting them know, hey, Mondays is a sprint day for me, you know, and Fridays is a hill day, and, you know, Tuesdays and Thursdays are technique days or whatever. Like, how do you guys kind of share that information with your strength coaches? I know I'm,
Kurt,
you guys are kind
Kurt
of,
did. But. Kurt did a lot, Kurt and yeah. Jordan. So we had always have a pre-semester meeting, and basically, to be honest with you, Kurt would say, hey, here's my sprint day. He's the sprint coach. Well, you guys know his sprint day. Here's my blah 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 blah. And so then, and maybe I'm wrong to do this, but I would give him a little say in it, like, hey, all right, what extra, here's the extras that I think that your program should do, here's why, where do you think they should go on this puzzle, right? So like Monday, we did a lot of snatch work. Now, whether they catched or not, whether they caught it or not, that was up to the athlete. But to me, it was, okay, let's be fast. Let's be as quick twitch as possible that day. But we're also going to pair it with a squat, because the squat pattern helps with sprints. Speed numbers, your 10-meter and 20-meter sprints go down if your squat number goes up to a specific point. Now, we're not, if it's like three times their body weight, probably not getting anything out of it. But, and so that's how we kind of talked. And then he would say, all right, they're going to be smashed on Tuesday. What do we need to do? Well, maybe it's primarily upper body base. You know, we got to focus on maybe, you know, there's a couple athletes that if they got too big, their speed numbers will go down. So I had to make sure we fluctuate with that too. But I think a strength coach, I think a good, in my opinion, a good strength coach will bring that to the table and say, all right, here's my system. Here's how I'm going to do things. So, you know, it's based off this, this, and this. Okay. And then you say, okay, well, here's how my system works. And you should have the trump card, in my opinion. But if you allow fluidity, and they allow fluidity, then that's coming together as a team, in my opinion. And so, you know, a lot of strength coaches listen to this. If they do, might say, you actually gave the track coach saying where that lifts went. Yeah, I got the lifts I wanted, so it didn't matter. Like, if he sees something that I'm not seeing, it's about the student athlete. It's not about me. It's not about Kurt. It's about the student athlete. You know, and that's like with Matt, we had day one. We do it Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and he still continues to do that. Mm-hmm. Well, Thursday, the girls didn't touch hardly anything. It was more recovery day, but like in the off season, that was a lighter day because he was prepping them to compete on the weekend. Well, I don't need to completely blow it up on Thursday if they're already maxed out fatigue after two or three days of training.
Have you ever run into a situation where philosophically you are on the other side of the spectrum as a sport coach?
I think it's going to happen. I think it's going to happen a lot. I think if you paired all of us together and said, what's your system, Blake? I think at least one of you would be like, man, that's so stupid. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. I would expect that. And I think not creating me as a good guy, I think I would look at one or two of you and say, man, that just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, because I also am curious, why'd you get nervous when Matt started writing probably big number mileage on a whiteboard?
Because I didn't understand it. Right. You know, like my conditioning side is less than a mile in any given day. If it's more than a mile in a segment, like I'm killing somebody, in my opinion. Right. Unless it's like, you know, basketball late January or late July, early August, like still, it's not even a mile. If I ever gotten a mile, I don't know. Anyways, I digress. What he started putting on his board was your craft. That's your craft. That's what you guys get paid for, right? And so for me to tell him that all of it is wrong, how do I know?
Well, and that's kind of what I was kind of leaning towards, is because, you know, we started this off by saying, well, we speak the same language. We have the same lingo, which is 100% true, right? We talk in reps, right, and sets and intensities and durations, mm-hmm, and all that, you know, all that stuff, right? It's very common. But where I think we differ as track coaches from a basketball coach or a football coach, or, you know, and I think this is a positive for the strength and conditioning industry, is how you've been able to separate yourself is, you know, a football coach has a playbook, right? And that's their job, is to teach plays and skills related to football. The strength coach in relation to football needs to get those guys physically ready to execute that. Our playbook as track and field coaches is reps and sets and durations and intensities. And so it's just this very murky world that we live in with college track and field, you know, and strength coaches that,
right,
although we speak the same language, like, you know, if there's a strength coach that says, well, we should do X, Y, and Z lifts. Well, hold on a second. You're starting to speak my language. You're starting to use my playbook here. Right. And that's, it becomes territorial, unfortunately.
No, I think it, but I almost think that it has to become territorial, because remember, we're supplemental as a strength conditioning for all sports. The only sport that we wouldn't be is powerlifting and weightlifting, right? Like that. So let's put that into the perspective. Your sport, and I'm sorry, what event do you coach?
Coach all of them.
Okay, so let's just say the 100-meter sprint, right? Let's just say you train the sprinters, and you have your 100-meter sprinter out there. You're gearing them to run the 100-meter sprint. I'm not gearing them to run a 100-meter sprint. I'm gearing them to back squat. Let's just use that word. Okay, now, is that back squat supplementing them?
Mm-hmm.
So, well, let's say you say no. Let's just say you say no, right? As my job as your strength coach, I either have to effectively change your opinion or adapt and overcome.
Right.
The grand scheme of things is not to say, in my opinion, again, it's not to tell you no 100% of the time. If I tell you no all the time as a strength coach, you're going to end up resenting me. We're starting to talk about some other things besides numbers and sets and reps and stuff like that. But if I build resentment for telling you no 100% of the time, you're not going to like what I'm doing. And why would you? Like, if you told me no 100% of the time, I'm going to look at you and be like, man, this program is, I'm done. I'm done with it. I'm just going to give him what he wants. And I'm not going to put any attention to it. All right. So there's got to be some give and take, but you have to, as the head coach or the position coach or whatever, you should have dictation, especially in the field of track and field and cross country, because what you prepare them for is the actual event. It's not football, where you're right, the playbook is the event, but you have flexibility. All right, I have to make them faster. I have to make them fit. I have to make them this. I have to make women's basketball, same thing. I have to make sure, you know, the only thing I asked my coach, now this is the way he wants it, the only thing I asked my coaches when I first started was, how do you run your system? I want to be up and down. Okay, well, now I know they got to be fit. That's the only thing I need to know. And we got to worry about injuries. So as a strength coach, really, if I tell you no, to answer your question, I think, in my opinion, if I tell you no 100% of the time, I'm not doing my job. And that's my opinion.
I think I
agree. I mean, I agree. But you're not going to get argument out of me on that.
Nope. Right.
Like I said, it's just this weird with track and field coaches and strength coaches, because we are so similar. And because we're, and I get into this, I have this, I don't want to say argument, but this conversation with our strength coaches is, we're doing the same thing. We're training sports. You're training, I'm training. We're not, don't have a, you know, I'm not worried about free throws. I'm not worried about post routes or, you know, a blocking scheme or, you know, something like that. I'm worried about rest, recovery, speed, you know, flexibility, all those characteristics.
Right. But I do, what I would, and this is probably going to not be a backhanded comment. If it is, I'm not meaning it to be. I would highly suggest to allow a little freedom in the weight room, as far as let's talk everything out. And let's, I want to know, if I was in your shoes, I would want to know what the heck I'm doing in here. Absolutely. Like, again, I go back to, this is your team. This is how you get paid, right? If I'm assigned to you, I'm not really worried about losing my job. That's just reality of the situation in college sports. If you talk to your strength coach and you don't like what's going on, tell me why you should do that. And if he cannot or she cannot tell you with evidence, then you shouldn't be doing it. I don't care if you're the best strength coach in the world, train the same boat. Like, even that guy probably isn't the best strength coach because the dude's a freak.
Right.
But let's just be real about, let's call apples and apples. Like, if you can't trust each other, then it's never going to work.
I agree.
And
with
it
that.
Goes 100%. Both work.
No, I agree 100%. Matt, you got a good one. Can I have him?
If you want to. I'm not sure what's going to happen down here, but go ahead and take him. He's a great guy.
we're probably not going to have school after next week anyways.
Blake, I tell you what, man, this has been tremendous insights. I think with the way you guys have approached it from the S&C side of it, from strength and conditioning, what you guys have done to invite your administrators to your convention is something actually, honestly, and Coach Herb mentioned before, I've never thought about it before. I know some of us have invited, but I never would have even thought to go ahead and move that forward. You guys move the sport forward and have taken a market to it and have done a tremendous job. And I know you've done an incredible job here at UAB, but you guys as your sport have done just and as your craft have really, really perfected it that way. And there's some things I think you've said in this discussion that we as strength, as cross country track and field coaches in general, need to take to heart to be able to move our sport forward. We definitely do need to be able to make ourselves more marketable. I mean, guys on the panel, I think we've talked about that many times. How do we make our sport more marketable? Strength and conditioning did it. I believe in cross country and track, we've talked about this. I think we're a little too scared to move our sport forward because of the fear of losing our positions or anything like that. But Blake, and it was awesome to have you. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for allowing me to come on with, again, you know, I think, and I'll speak to just strength coaches right now. I think you have to make yourself uncomfortable to grow. And I think doing that is training up different teams and not getting your way. Ego has to be thrown out the door. I'm not saying that you can't train your team. That's the fun part. The fun part is X's, like our X's and O is, you know, cleaning or snatching or squatting. That's the fun part. The hard part is getting your athletes prepared for the season. And doing that, like, it requires a lot of communication and some sacrifices and some and give and take. And you strength coaches need to know, like, it's not about what you want to do all the time. It has to be about what the head coaches want for their program. Now, doesn't mean that you can't see eye to eye. And that's what you have to strive for is trusting the process of what they want and then after you get that trust, I'm telling you, it just works. It just works. And hopefully you win championships with that coach. Who knows?
No, I mean, very well said. And I think there's a lot of lessons actually for coaches that's in exactly what you just said. But for everybody taking time out of their day, taking an hour out of their day, 70 minutes, whatever the case might be, to sit back, listen to us talk, banter, ask questions. We all respect the professions of what we do, especially strength and conditioning. So it was great to have everybody on here. Hopefully you found it enjoyable. Hopefully you found it something useful. If you did, please share it on whatever platform you're listening to, Spotify, iTunes, Anchor, whatever the case might be. Share it, like it, give us a review, promote it however you'd like to do it. But as always, the word of mouth is without question the best form of advertisement and the best form of learning. We are going to try and do better again next week. So thank you everybody for your time. Blake, again, thank you. And you guys have a great week. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for coming on.
Thank you. Yeah.